What's up, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Shooting the Breeze. I'm your host, Max Hooper, and the purpose of this podcast is for me to share my unique basketball experiences and perspectives, while also sharing those of my guests. For those of you who aren't aware, during my entire senior season at Oakland University last year, I did not attempt one two-point field goal. I took a whole lot of threes, though, 257 of them, as a matter of fact. I've always prided myself in being a great shooter, and that is what continues to propel my basketball career now. So yep, you guessed it, we'll be talking shooting on this show. Today I have a very special guest, a former teammate and great friend of mine, Kay Felder. Kay and I played together at Oakland University for 2 years, where he was my point guard. He currently plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Today Kay and I will discuss some of the great shooters he's played with, his job as a point guard, the differences between the college and NBA game, as well as a bunch of other things. Without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Kay Felder to the first episode of Shooting the Breeze.
Hey, man, thanks for having me, my man.
Absolutely. You know, we got to kick it off right. So let's just dive right in. The first thing that I want to discuss is our relationship and how we first met. I don't even know if you remember this, but the first time we met in person would have been my visit to Oakland when I was getting ready to transfer. And Coach Darren Sorensen, you know, not a lot of people might know who that is other than the Oakland fans who are hopefully tuned in here. Darren Sorensen, you know, he was like, that's the guy. That's the guy. I'm like, oh, that little fellow over there, you know. He's like, yeah, that's the guy. I'm like, all right. So we started playing open gym. And this dude was just feeding me every time. I'm knocking down shots. And, you know, sure enough, I commit to Oakland, and we get things rolling. And, you know, my junior year, we're going to talk about this more in detail later, but I think my junior year, you know, we just had to develop that chemistry. I think that chemistry is so important between a shooter and a point guard with the ball. So my junior year wasn't what it was supposed to be, but then the summer, I think that was big. Moneyball tournament, we got to get out there and just develop that, you know, that chemistry, you know, knowing exactly where to deliver the ball, and I knew where to expect the ball. So we did that and then rolled into the senior year. So we'll dig all into that later. But you played with some great shooters. You played with Travis Bader. You played with myself. You played with Kyle Korver, Mike Dunleavy, James Jones, Channing Frye, et cetera, et cetera. As a point guard, just talk about playing with a shooter, delivering the ball on target, and whatever thoughts you got on that.
Oh, man, myself as a point guard, I like to be aggressive just by, you know, playmaking and things like that. And not necessarily just getting my own shot, but create for others. Like if I'm driving to the lane and I see someone helps off of my shooter, I got to give them the ball because I know it's going to be a knockdown. I mean, like, say, for instance, playing with you last year, I got so many assists off guys just leave you. I don't know why they would leave you, but... I just know, all right, if I'm driving, it's going to be a knockdown. Then they wouldn't find you in transition. I think that was, you made my job so much easier also, you know, being able to spread the floor and, you know, space the floor out, which made it so much easier. So, I mean, I love playing with shooters, you know. It just makes the game so much easier.
Totally. I mean, I think shooters make the game easier for the other players, and other players make the game easier for the shooters, you know. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but just talk about the shooter's impact on, like, an entire team. So, you know, for example, last year, I feel like if you have the ball up top and maybe there's some sort of screening action for me, you know, you got a guy like Jalen Hayes or Percy Gibson, I feel like even the shooter creates open shots for them just because of so much attention that a shooter attracts.
Man, yes. See you. Say Jalen goes sets the screen for you to come to alpha pin down. Let's say both guys go with you. He slips and get an easy dunk. I remember just getting assists off that alone. I mean, just throwing the right on top of the defender and him just getting dunks and easy layups. Also, let's say they both stay with Jalen. Then now you got a wide open three for yourself. I mean, it's just so tricky, especially if you have a knockdown shooter. They just get so much attention paid to them. It's crazy how it actually works. And, you know, we was watching film and things like that, and I'm just looking at how just one guy can, you know, create a lot of chaos.
Totally, totally. I think it's almost hilarious because, I mean, sure, there'd be the games, you know, where, you know, either me or Travis Bader, you know what I mean, where we'd go off for, you know, 8, 9, 10 threes or whatever. But then there's the games where we only hit maybe 2 or 3 of them, but the defense still pays so much attention.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Yes, you're dead on.
Yeah, and, like, you know, sometimes you look at opposing benches, and they might want the team to give up a layup as opposed to letting the shooter get a rhythm. So I think that's just crazy. And I think why our offense functioned so well last year and why we led the nation in scoring at 86.4 points per game is because I think we had, you know, three huge components. We obviously had you running the show, controlling the offense, and also able to score once something broke down. You know, obviously you were our leading scorer. But then we also had me as a shooter, and then we had low post threats. So I think if you have those three things, it's just going to be like a dominant offense because it's literally pick your poison. As far as an opposing team coming up with a scouting report. So just to go along to that. So if you're teaching a young player, or if you're just trying to, you know, your shot's a little off. Just off the top of your head, what are three keys you think as far as a shooter? Because I think people underrate you as a shooter. You shot 35.5% as a junior at Oakland on 6.1 attempts. So, I mean, a lot of those were obviously contested tough shots. But I think people underrate you just because you have so many facets to your game. So talk about just your three top keys that you think go into being a great shooter.
Three great keys to me would be definitely your feet. For me, I like to, you know, my one dribble shot, you know, because I like to have the ball in my hands. But say if you're doing catch and shoot, the guy that's throwing the ball to you can't be a sloppy pass, can't be too fast or too, you know, too wild. It has to be right in your shot pocket so you can get right to it. So, you know, those two, you know. And then you have to have the confidence to know you're going to make it. So those three keys alone, you know, your feet, shot pocket, and confidence, those are the three keys to me.
Totally. Totally. I think those are apply to me. You know, like you said, you got the two, you know, more technique and, like, physical things. But confidence is so huge. And, I mean, that leads us into what I wanted to talk to next. Just talk about the shooter's mentality and – even as yourself, as a scorer, as a shooter, talk about if you've missed a few in a row, what's your mentality in terms of, you know, the next shot that's going up?
Oh, man, for me, say I miss a couple in a row, I always know that next one is going in. I'll never stop shooting because the shots that I don't shoot, I miss 100% of them. And now my confidence is off. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely going to keep shooting and keep shooting because, you know, I put a lot of work into my game. So that's here nor there why I'm going to keep shooting.
Totally. Totally. I think you see with any great shooter, I mean, like I listed the ones you've been around, you know what I mean? I think all great shooters tend to, you know, be obsessive and crazy about getting their shots up and being gym rats. And I think with me, that was a huge thing, you know, being able to deal with the misses and not being afraid to go 1 for 10, you know, one game, or to have that off game and know that you're going to bounce back and have an explosive scoring game just because of, like you said, the work you've put in and you just having faith in your ability and in your teammates' ability to continue to deliver you the ball. Let's rewind a little bit, you know, before the Cavaliers, before Oakland University, even before Pershing High School. Give me a look into, like, your player development. How did you come to be the player you are today? Talk about, you know, how your shot developed, how your, you know, if you were always a scorer, playmaker, just whatever you have to say on that.
Oh, man, before Pershing and Oakland, I was pretty much just a scorer. I really didn't have too much court vision and things like that. All I really wanted to do was just score. I mean, then, you know, once I got to high school, my high school coach, Coach Canada, you know, he told me I wasn't going to always be a scorer. then we watched a lot of film my 4 years in high school, and that helped me, you know, develop the playmaking ability, you know, that I got to where I am now. And then once I got to OU, I just carried on, you know, what I learned from high school. And then, you know, Campy, he also let me have the ball a lot, you know, just about like 90% of the time, or I forget the numbers, but I always had the ball in my hands. And, you know, I just always thought, why not try to get, you know, double doubles? Because it's fun to me making everybody around me better. I mean, just seeing a guy get a bucket, then now he's smiling. Now, you know, we come down, get a stop on defense, get another bucket. It's just amazing how that impacts the game. So I definitely put a lot of work in the film room. You know, that definitely helped me out a lot.
Right, because there's that fine line between, you know, as a scoring guard, and you see it more and more in the NBA today, but as a scoring guard, you know, you got to get people involved, but then you also got to look for your own shots. So I think there's that balance. But, you know, you see guys more and more today, you know, got these games, are scoring more points and getting more assists, you know, which is crazy. And I mean, you were the college version of that last year where you were top, you know, top assist man in the country, but number four in scoring. And I mean, that just shows, obviously, like you said, you had the ball in your hands 90-plus whatever percent of the time, and everything flowed through you. But I think that's what starting there at the head of the snake is what made our offense so great. And you also talked about Campy and giving you the ball right away. Let's talk about your college recruitment process a little bit and talk about these, you know, these schools. I think if I read correctly, I think you only had two official scholarship offers. Is that right?
Really? I mean, well, what happened with me was, you know, 10th grade to 11th grade, mid-major schools was calling, MAC schools, Horizon schools. And my 12th grade year, I sat down with Coach Canada, my former high school coach. And we went over a list of schools, and we were just thinking about what schools would be the best fit for me. And then we were just asking questions like, what schools run, what schools let their point guards play, what schools, you know, fit me. And Oakland was the best choice. I mean, I was going to take visits to Eastern, Akron, of course, Oakland. And also took a visit to, it's a school in the Valley. I can't think of the name of it. We played them.
Southern Illinois.
Southern Illinois, right. The Salukis.
Yeah.
So I went there, had an okay visit, but the way that their system was set up, I mean, I didn't feel like I would thrive in that. So Oakland was just the best choice. I mean, it was just crazy how Oakland was just clear-cut the best choice for me, and it all worked out perfect. I mean, the day at the table while we eating, you know, lunch, trying to pick a school, it all worked out. I just look back on that day and just smile.
Definitely. I think a lot of guys run into that because, you know, I think – You committed early in your senior year, I think, and I bet you if you would have waited around till the spring, you know, you would have had those high major schools who had gone onto their, you know, first, second, third, fourth options and been like, all right, you know, let's maybe give this kid a chance. And I think obviously you made the right decision. You know, you are where you are right now, but sometimes kids get caught up in maybe a name, you know what I mean, and not so much the system. I mean, you were familiar with Oakland because you're from the area, but, you know, people on the outside might like, oh, why is he going to Oakland? You know, why is he doing that? You know, why is he not going to Michigan State or Michigan or just, you know, whoever? Talk about that just in general, you think. Do you think kids get distracted by the name and maybe not so much which school fits them the best?
Man, most definitely. Oh, man, I see it all the time with especially on Instagram, guys committing to, you know, these high major schools and getting caught up in the name. For me, when guys and kids or anybody asks me, what do I think about the school situation? You have to really think about what fits you best. I mean, of course, everybody wants the big name school, the, you know, the lifestyle that the high majors live, but maybe that's not for you. You know, you really have to sit and think, and, you know, sometimes it don't be the kid. I think sometimes it be like the parents and the people around them that, you know, try to influence them to do other things. Like for me, I feel like my support system was the best. They told me, make the decision that's best for you. I mean, you can ask me whatever you want to ask me, but at the end of the day, you the one that has to live with the decision. And my parents been telling me that from day one. And that's why I chose Oakland, because no one thought I would make it out of there. No one thought, you know, I would be in the position I am in today. And I just wanted to prove people wrong. Plus, when someone tells me I can't do anything or can't do something, I love proving people wrong. That just thrived me, just added more motivation, more fuel to the fire.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I think, unfortunately, you know, I think I ran into that problem because I think if I would have been at Oakland my whole career, I think I would have had a much better experience. But, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, I got caught up in the, you know, in the big lights of St. John's and playing in Madison Square Garden and all sorts of things. So I think sometimes what happens is the school that calls you first might end up being, or maybe not necessarily first, but, you know, early in the process, that one might end up being the one that is where you probably should go. Not all the time, but sometimes it just works that way. Because then when you get these schools popping in late, you know, you've been there all along. You've been doing your thing all along.
Right.
You've been at the same events, you know. So where were you guys? Why didn't you guys come calling early? Oh, it's because such and such committed here, such and such committed there. And I mean, you never want to be someone's fourth or fifth option, because then it's not tailored to you. You know what I mean? And I think
that's one thing where Oakland had like topped all other schools for me. You know, that was my first offer. They never really missed a game. I mean, I think Oakland was at just about all my games. I mean, I would always see someone like there. I mean, it was just always, all right, this is our guy, this is gonna be our number one option. And they just stuck with that from day one.
Right. And as a recruit, obviously that's a good feeling. And, you know, I think just from if you put yourself in the shoes of a college recruiter, you know, you're not going to waste your time going to every single game of a kid that you don't think fits your system and that you don't think is going to be a big time performer in your system. So, you know, Oakland might not be glamorous like a Michigan State, a Duke, a North Carolina, a UCLA, you know what I mean? But not everyone can go to those schools, and not everyone is a great fit at those schools, and not everyone's going to be able to do their thing at those schools. So, you know, Oakland obviously, like you said, was the right fit, and for a lot of reasons they let you do what you do, but also because they embraced you, and they weren't shy. They didn't shy away from, oh, he's 5'9", oh, he's only a scorer. You know, they just said, this is our guy, we're going for it. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that confidence in you only fueled your confidence more to go do big things there as you were coming in.
Yeah, man, it was just crazy how Oakland just always was there for me. Mm-hmm. They helped me out a lot, and I don't think they really understand how much they helped me. But
sure,
they really did.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But, you got it.
Let's swing back a little bit to the whole shooters thing, and like you said, you've played with some different shooters, and I saw the interview that LeBron gave right when Kyle Korver was acquired, and he's talking about, you know, such and such likes the ball delivered at a certain angle. Talk about just like the differences in playing with the different shooters you played with, like specifics, like you know, is there some guy who prefers something different, like me, Travis Bader, et cetera, or just talk about that a little bit?
I'm going to just talk about how both of y'all are.
Sure.
Travis was, to me, y'all was pretty much the same, but he would like to put it on the floor a little bit, so I could understand. Like, I could pretty much throw it to him anywhere. And he would catch it. I mean, same with you, but I know he would probably go get it too.
Right.
You know, sometimes here and there. With you, you like to come off screens. You never stop moving. I mean, and you always open. I don't know how people just left you open. People will be guarding Travis from baseline to baseline. Like, it would be times we would run Memphis, and he's at half court just standing there because their face guarding him. With you, guys, I don't think they read the scout report right. I mean, I really don't, because it's amazing how you get up, you know, 300-plus threes. It was just crazy how they did that. I mean, you know, we also caused sets for both of y'all, which got y'all open, you know, a lot, too. But with you, I already knew where you was going to be at. I mean, I always seen you out the corner of my eye. With Travis, he may push it up sometimes. So, I mean, pretty much just throwing it anywhere to him, you know, would be cool. But with you, you want it in your shot pocket so you can get right to your shot, so you can get that quick trigger. And which was perfect for me, because I feel like I didn't have to work as hard to get you the ball. It was just right there for you.
Right. And I think there's a few things that I have to say about that. But I think in transition, what we had to take the time to develop was to know exactly where I was running. You know what I mean? And by the time my senior year, your junior year, I feel like I'd run exactly to the spot. And it just come down to whether the defense went with me and then you'd go get the bucket in transition, or, you know, if the defense collapsed, and, you know, because most teams, they're taught run to the rim, protect the rim, and I'm just running to the three-point line. And, like, I don't know the exact stats, but we had to have one of the best transition attacks, you know what I mean, statistically in college basketball. I know I shot a higher percentage in transition from the three than I did on spot-ups in the half court. So, I mean, those are just easy shots because the defense is running back. You know, like anyone, mm-hmm. you sit from age of 5 years old, you're trained to run back and protect the basket. You know what I mean? We always hear basket, basket, you know, all sorts of things. And then we develop that chemistry and you're able to kick it out. And then, or if they run to me, you know, once they adapted to that and ran to me, then you're just going one-on-one pretty much on anyone. So, I mean, that goes back to what we talked about earlier, but it was just a great relationship in transition anywhere really. But, and then also the second thing I had to say was how I asked you, you know, what are the differences? But me and Travis Bader, we ran the exact same plays for us. You know what I mean? So like it ended up being like when the sets were ran, it ended up being boom, the exact same pass was being made pretty much on your part.
Yeah, plus I like making the advanced pass. It just makes the game so much easier, because if you don't have the shot, you know, I'm definitely about to create for myself or someone else, or maybe even it come back to me and they leave you, which they did do that a lot, and I swing it right back to you for the three. So I mean, it was just fun playing around and toying with guys.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's just. And then that doesn't even mention the big man we had, you know, who were able to score. And so we can just score from anywhere on the court. But anyways, we've kind of touched on it naturally, but the next thing I wanted to talk about was the importance of someone knowing their role on a team. Like, how do you think that affects the way an offense runs? And if everyone knows their role, everyone does their job, you know, how does that affect the team?
Okay, I'll take for example a guy like Jalen Hayes that we both play with.
Sure.
He knew his role. He knew he wasn't gonna be, you know, outside, you know, behind the three, you know, shooting dribble pull ups and things like that. So what he worked with, I've seen him work on in his workouts was post moves. Post moves, free throws, and maybe occasionally jumper here and there. So he basically knew his role. He was gonna be down on the block and things like that, and he succeeded at it, and he's still doing what he does. And you know, he's one of the best big men in the league, if not the best in my eyes. Like, then take example of you. You knew what you wanted to do. Cappy told you what you wanted to do. And, you know, you took it real around with it. You were a three-point shooter, dead on. And, you know, you expanded on it. And it just made our team so much better. I just feel like if someone knows their role and they do it, then we have no problems. I mean, all you can do is play your heart out, you know, win or lose. You feel like you did your job.
Right. And I think a lot of that is on the coach, you know, to define the roles and help the players, you know, put them in positions to execute their roles. You know, obviously, it goes back to, you know, our offense, the way it was, you know, the set plays and stuff like that. They're all designed, you know, for me coming off the side. I prefer to come off. You go into your left hand or whatever. Jalen Hayes getting the left hand hook, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's all tailored to what everyone what does well. And I think when people know their roles, they don't take shots that are outside of their role. And then they're not, you know, they're not too proud that they're able to set other people up to do what they do. You know what I mean? Like, we got people willing to screen and sacrifice their body, you know, to get players open or whatever, make unselfish plays. And that's the way a team, not just at Oakland in our experience, but even, you know, in the NBA, if people know their roles and do their job, then all, you know, it all takes care of itself. As long as everyone's playing their ass off and giving their all, that's all you can really ask is to do your job. And I think typically the best offensive teams always have really well-defined roles and everyone knows what everyone's going to do.
Yep. Take for example, the Spurs. Mm-hmm. They run their stuff to a T. Everyone knows what spot to be in, what their role is, what they're capable of, and they're going to do it. And that's perfect. You know, that's a great way and a good thing to look at coming up as a kid to study them. Am I? You know, I look at the Spurs, watch their games when they're on TV, and, you know, Kawhi, he's probably going to take, you know, most of the shots. But you got Patty Mills coming off the bench. Okay, that second unit, he's going to run the offense, play hard D. He's going to do his job. He's going to do what he's there for. And Pop puts everybody in the right position to succeed. You take a guy like Danny Green. He's succeeding in his role. He's a defender and a three-point shooter. And I'm pretty sure he's loving it. So it's just all types of things that goes into it. I just feel like if everyone knows their role, then definitely the team will be much better.
Totally. But I think that's also something that takes time to develop, you know what I mean? Because as you learn, you know, certain guys might excel at one thing, but they might have a skill that you might not know that they necessarily have, or there's just a rhythm that comes with playing, knowing where people are going to be, like I've talked about pretty much this whole time, how people want the ball delivered. And when a team is clicking on all cylinders and everyone knows their job, it's just a beautiful thing to watch them play. I think our offense at Oakland, both of our last years there, just pretty much embodied all of that. You know what I mean? Defensively, you know, that's a whole different story. But but our offense, the way it rolled was, you know, very, very effective, and everyone knew their job. So talk about, you know, sticking with the theme of offenses a little bit. I read an article, and I'm not sure how much truth there is to this, but there was something where your current coach, Tyronn Lue, you know, he said, "Stop looking at me. Just go play. Stop looking at me." And I understand why you did that from my perspective, but any Oakland fans who are listening will understand why you do that, because, you know, if we're not doing transition at Oakland, Campy's pretty much controlling the offense, and he's telling you what he wants you to call out. So just talk about that and the differences there.
Oh, man. Basically, what Tyronn Lue was saying is basically, I know you can play. You don't have to keep looking over here for play calls and things like that. You know our offense. You know what plays. You know, help you succeed and things like that and get other guys open and use your playmaking ability to, you know, free up shooters or even free up yourself. So, I mean, that's what he meant by that. He just be confident in you. Do what you do. And then with Campy, is, you know, he put the ball in my hands from day one, and he, you know, guided me the right way. And he had, you know, spent time with me, a little bit more time with me, to, you know, show me the ropes. And it was perfect.
Right. But I also think, on the same note, I think Campy, you know, wants to have that control over the offense and wants to call the plays that he wants, rather than being in, you know, more of a flowing, you know, read and react type of offense that maybe you see typically in the NBA. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think that's all college coaches that want to control the offense. Honestly, I mean, I see it all the time. It's like I think every time down, a college coach is calling the set. I never seen it not once unless there was in transition. Other than that, it's a set every time down, whether in the NBA where you have guys that can go one-on-one without any offense and create something. You got very talented guys in the NBA that can get their own shot and create for others without any play calls.
Right. For anyone listening, I don't mean that in a bad way, that Campy controls the offense. You know, I think he just knows that his system works. And
He's been running that same system for a long time.
You know, with a few wrinkles, you know, change things up a little bit, but it's pretty much the same base system. It works. So I don't mean that in a negative. I just mean that there's big differences between the NBA and college in terms of the way an offense runs. And also, you got to think about it this way. College, you got 30 seconds. NBA, you only got 24 seconds. So you can't be, you know, worried about people getting in the right spots. You got to be able to just play off each other and, you know, play principles. You know, be able to space the floor, drive and kick, pick and roll, all sorts of things. Not to say that the NBA doesn't run set plays, but there's just big differences between the college game and the NBA game. So any other, you know, noticeable differences you can you know, point out that maybe a casual fan wouldn't just notice between playing the college game and playing the NBA game?
The speed and physicality, I mean, it's by none far different. I mean, the NBA game is way faster. And also, you know, there's a lot of schemes on defense that goes with the NBA game that people won't recognize.
Sure. And a lot of casual fans, you know, people say, oh, the NBA just rolls the ball out and plays, and they're not preparing, blah 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 blah. I think that's the farthest thing from the truth. I mean, I can't say I've personally played an NBA game yet, but based on the way I watch the game and see these breakdowns of games and, you know, watching film, like, there's a whole lot of strategy and schemes that goes into every time down the floor in terms of the way you're defending the pick and roll or rotating on defense or guarding certain players. And especially when you got a star player where you have to compromise your defense and maybe double team or rotate, you know, there's just so much that goes into it that maybe the casual fan wouldn't notice or would just say, oh, they're just out there playing the game. Talk about that a little bit.
I mean, you pretty much hit it off on the nose. I mean, honestly, that I don't think I could really give you much more than what you gave. I mean,
that's pretty much it. I didn't mean to take your thunder.
That's pretty much it.
But anyways, we'll rewind back a little bit. Let's go back to freshman year at Oakland University. I mean, obviously, you've always had NBA aspirations, but, you know, you average about, I think it was 6-10 or 10-6 as a freshman, and, you know, you're going into your sophomore year. Could you have ever imagined that leaving school after your junior year was a possibility, or were you just trying to become the best player you could be?
At that time, I really was just trying to become the best player I could be, honestly. Like, I wasn't thinking, but I was just you know, get better each year. And, you know, I mean, go for it at the end of your senior year. Then, you know, I come back my sophomore year and average 18 and like 7 or something like that. It was just like, okay, maybe next year might be my year to leave school. I was definitely thoughts on it, but, you know, I totally wasn't sold on it until, you know, that junior year came and I really was thinking about it. I had talks with people, and, you know, really just, you know, like, said to myself, like, I'm going to go for it.
Was there a certain point in time when you were like, okay, maybe this can happen? Was it after the season, just sort of a thing? You know, I know you had those big blow-up games, obviously, you know, Washington and Michigan State, but was there a certain time you were like, hey, maybe this is possible, or were you just trying to block those thoughts out?
During the year, I mean, just now watching NBA games and watching our games, and I'm like, maybe I can do that. Honestly, like, maybe I can be out there with those guys. I mean, I always had the confidence to, you know, one day be in there, but I just totally wasn't sold on it. I mean, then conference play started. It was just something so crazy, honestly.
Sure.
It was just, I really can't put into words, but through the year, I mean, I was just going back and forth between leaving and not leaving.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, you obviously, you dream big and you hope big, but, you know, you can never really, I mean, that's your dream manifesting itself right before your eyes, and that's, you know, that had to have been an amazing feeling. And, you know, I was there playing with you alongside, and, you know, you're so wrapped up in what's going on and the team, and, you know, like, I don't even know. I mean, I knew you were dominating college basketball, but I don't even know how aware I was of that. You know what I mean? Of just, I knew you belonged in the NBA, but there's never been a player who left Oakland University early. You know what I mean? Like, it was a very cool thing for that. That whole season was obviously, as we know, a very special season for it for a lot of ways. But and now you are where you are, and I guess the rest is history. So it doesn't really matter when you first thought of it. You know, it happened. And it's a very cool thing. So that'll take us right into what I was wanted to cover next, which was, obviously, I don't know how tall you actually are, but they list you at 5'9", so I'll say you're 5'9". just talk about being an undersized player and how that affects your mindset going into the game.
It gives me constant motivation because, you know, sometimes people, you know, overlook your size, and I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, I can do what you can do, and I think I can do it better. Just because you're taller, that doesn't mean anything. I can still guard the same way you do, and I can still, you know, I can score probably better than you. So it'd be all added motivation to when guys look down on smaller defenders. I mean, just take a guy like Isaiah Thomas right now. He is killing the game, honestly, with scoring and assisting. I mean, you know, he runs his offense to a T, and he's running the way Coach Brown wants it.
Right, and so do you look at guys like Isaiah Thomas, maybe Nate Robinson? You know, do you, I know I look at guys who are, you know, shooters who have. Had great careers, you know, Kyle Korver, J.J. Redick. I look at those guys. Do you look at the shorter guys, or how does that play into your mindset?
I definitely have to look into those guys. I mean, just because I'm not getting any taller, you know, I'm not growing anymore. This is the height I'm going to be for the rest of my life. So, you know, Nate Robinson, Damian Stoudemire, even J.J. Barea, you know, he impacts the game as well. So for me being short, I definitely had to look at those guys.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think in some ways being a small player has advantages that maybe a lot of people won't look at. You know, just being able to slither in there and get inside the defense, and naturally, to be a small guy in this game to survive, you got to have that huge chip on your shoulder. And Isaiah Thomas just the other day was quoted in an article saying, "quote I'm the best player in the world." That's what he said, and I think, I mean, you know, you're at a certain stage of your career where you kind of, you know, at Oakland, you had the ball in your hands and were a dominant player every single time down the court. But, you know, you press that reset button a little bit. You're back on the bottom of the totem pole. But I know you have that same type of confidence and chip on your shoulder. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay, well, with that stuff right there, I mean, easily last year, you know, I feel like I was the best player in college basketball. That's just how I felt. I came out every game playing like that. I wanted to be the guy that everyone looked at, no matter who I'm playing against. I don't care if it's Michigan State, Virginia. I don't care. I want to leave every game with someone talking about me. And that's just the mindset that I have, you know. And right now, you know, start from the bottom. Nobody said this would be easy. Nobody said it was going to be all peas and cream. So that's why I just get up, make sure I work every day, and make sure I stay ready and stay engaged to what's going on. So that way, when my number do get called, I'm ready for it. You know, I can show my ability to actually be out there with those guys and be able to play with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And just like you said, you're back on the bottom of the totem pole, and just got to figure it out and find your way. And it's probably cool to see Isaiah Thomas, you know, with the timing of him dominating the game the way he is, because he's not just a solid player, you know what I mean? He's one of the premier players in the league, and it's definitely good timing, because, you know, you haven't seen one of those guys for a while. Nate Robinson, he was always like I guess he's currently out the league, but he was always a, you know, a spark plug. Boom, come off the bench, go get a bunch of buckets. But Isaiah Thomas, he is the guy. You know what I mean? He is the guy. He's basically you in the NBA in college last year, his own version of it. So it's got to be pretty cool. And just I kind of relate to you in that sense. We've never even talked about this before, but I kind of relate to you because people have always told me, oh, he's too slow. You know, he's too one-dimensional. You know, he doesn't bring this to the table, that to the table. Just like people tell you you're too small. Just like people, you won't be able to get your shot off. I mean,
exactly.
People are always going to talk. So what can you really do about it, you know?
Prove them wrong.
That's it. So this is Shooting the Breeze with Max Hooper. I've got my first ever episode here with Kay Felder. And the way we're going to wrap up every episode is... you know, my senior year, I shot only threes. So we're going to wrap it up with a top three to stick with the theme. And I'll start it off. The one I chose today, you know, the category is going to be the top three greatest scorers in NBA history. And why? You know, why are those your greatest scorers? So I've got my list. Kay's got his list. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start off mine. The first one that I have is a guy who's currently still playing, so, you know, his story's not fully written, but he has career averages. He averages 27 points per game for his career. Almost career 40-50-90 club, not quite. 48% from the field, 38% from three, and 88% from the line. That's Kevin Durant. I think that's a very, you know, easy pick. You might even have him on your list. If you do, it's all good. But just, you know, dominant scorer, 6'11", guard skills, can shoot the ball, get to the rim at will. So that's my first greatest scorer of all time, NBA history. Go ahead.
All right. My number one would definitely have to be, you know, Michael Jordan.
There you go.
I wear his kicks every day, just about. But I'm going to say Jordan because, I mean, he was fearless. He knew couldn't nobody guard him. He was going to take the game-winning shots every time. And no one was going to be in front of his way. I mean, and the number, his numbers don't lie. That's one thing I like to say. You know, women lie, men lie, but numbers don't lie. I mean, you can just look at his numbers and see that they're at an all-time high.
I mean, yeah, what can you really say about Mike? You know, the GOAT. He was on my list as well. I didn't have a certain order I was going in, but Mike was on my list, so I figured you might steal that one from me. But, I mean, he's just array of post moves, and he could hit you from anywhere on the court, you know what I mean? He became a three-point shooter at the end of towards the end of his career, but just the way he posted up as a guard, you know, you never saw that, and people try to emulate him, but, you know, I gotta say Mike is pretty damn impressive. My number two on my list is he's from an older era, but it's just a little bit different in terms of when you think of a traditional scorer. But anyone who puts the ball in the hole is a scorer, no matter how you do it. So I'm going to go with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, the all-time leading scorer in NBA history.
What's that?
The sky hook. What can you say? The dude invented a shot or revolutionized a shot, you know what I mean? And you couldn't guard it. No matter what you did, you could not guard it.
Not at all.
So that's going to be my number two.
I just give you my number two then. Well, actually, he'd be my number three because Kareem was on my list.
Kareem was on yours too?
And then I'm gonna end it with the Bean, Kobe Bean Bryant.
That's
all said and done right there, Kobe Bean Bryant right there. I mean,
Kobe, you got the same pretty much the same arguments that go for Jordan. He was his own version of Jordan, and that killer mentality every time out on the court. You'd have to take him kicking and screaming off the court. It was very hard to beat him, and had that competitive drive that, you know, a lot of people try to imitate him as well. And I had one more who's kind of a wild card, you know what I mean? Not necessarily a lot of people would choose him, but I'm going to say George Gervin, the Iceman with the finger roll. More of a popular icon these days, but just because of his personality and flair, and people weren't doing things like that back on the court. You know, back in the day, things were a lot more traditional, and you know, guys weren't supposed to take shots like that. But he was just a all-time scorer, all-time great scorer.
Most definitely.
All right, so that's gonna wrap it up. That's all we've got for the first episode of Shooting the Breeze, hosted by me, Max Hooper. Thank you very much, Kay, for joining us, and.
Nope.
We'll be looking forward to see what you got on the court for us soon. All the best to you.
Same to you.